Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we get Darren's take on the latest games, including Battlefield 6 and Borderlands 4. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay. The December episodes on the Hardware Asylum Podcast have been somewhat of a mixed bag sometimes, but usually center around two themes.
Okay.
One would be gaming.
Right.
And the other would be, well, what are you going to get for Christmas?
Oh, yeah. The top 10 lists and such.
Yeah. The MPDs and all that stuff. Well, I thought maybe we should roll into a gaming episode this year because all of our past episodes have been kind of devoid of gaming.
Oh, and that's a shame, too.
Yeah, because, you know, we talked about Battlefield a couple of times. And then, you know, I haven't been able to get myself to play some games. I've been busy doing other stuff. So I haven't really been very topical on that subject.
Oh.
But I know that Darren goes and flips his little Steam thing up every once in a while. He's like, oh, he's playing a game again.
Well, and the nice thing is that, you know, my kids play, my wife plays. So it's not too difficult for me to just drop in and play a game to relax with my family.
And what have you been playing lately?
Ooh, okay. So three games that I kind of rotate between, maybe a fourth. So I'll get the casual ones out of the way. I play a bit of Fortnite.
Okay.
It's a great time waster for me because I played the Save the World version. So for those of you that aren't familiar, Fortnite has a lot of different game modes in it, racing games and the whole shebang. Mm-hmm. Their primary game is the survival game, right? The Last Man Standing,
yeah,
which is kind of what made him famous. But they have a secondary game that's the Save the World mode. It's less popular, maybe because they haven't promoted it as well as I'd like. Bias, right?
Yeah.
Where you you do basically tower defense.
Oh. Well, yeah, you were classically always a tower defense guy. You played
Dungeon Defenders.
Yeah,
right? Dungeon for years.
Defenders. Yeah.
And so I really like the tower defense aspect of it. It's got a little bit of first person shooter, a little tower defense, and some mission based stuff to keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. So I've got that. I've been playing a little bit of an older game, Deep Rock Galactic, with my kid.
That I have heard, but I'm not familiar with the genre.
So it's you're miners and you go down and complete these missions on this asteroid and you're attacked by aliens. It's a four-player co-op when everybody's playing. You can play it solo, but it really shines as a co-op game. And it's relatively, I don't know, heart-pounding. So it's got a little bit of the mining and exploring combined with Aliens, the movie.
Heart-pounding, meaning that you get jump-scared?
Not necessarily jump scares, but you have limited ammo, limited resources. You're exploring caves, you're mining, so you can build your own passages. And it has, you know, a lot of different types of missions. It's been around for a while.
It's kind of like when you're exploring in Minecraft and you ran out of food.
Kind of. I mean, it's a great concept. Mm-hmm. And it's got some silly style to it. I would definitely say that if you're interested in co-op games, on the PC, I think there's a console version of it, but we play it on the PC. That's one to watch for on sale. It's a bit repetitive, but it's a lot of fun. But cool. I know those are not the games that people are excited about. So let's talk about hot games.
Hot games.
So hot. I'm going to give you some hot takes on some hot games. It'll be so hot. So I've been playing, two of what I think are going to be the hottest titles for the Christmas season. And we can take them in either order, but I'll just spit them out there.
Well, let's try alphabetical.
Okay, so I think everybody knows I'm a huge Battlefield fan.
Oh yes,
have been for years. Played competitively way back, and now play casually a lot. And for me, it's a good excuse to get online with my buddies, a lot of which are no longer in the States. People that I've played with, traveling to LAN parties and that sort of thing. Mm. So there's a new Battlefield. We've talked a little bit about it.
Yep, Battlefield 6, which let's recap, because in a previous episode, we talked about how different Battlefields were different eras.
Yes.
Now, Battlefield 6 is back in the modern era, or is it?
It is a return to the modern era.
Okay.
So no futuristic stuff so far.
No robot dogs?
No. I miss the robot dogs. Oh. you know, it has drones, but they're used for spotting. All of the weapons are real world weapons, which is nice. The attachments and stuff are real. And when I say attachments, I'm talking about scopes and grips and clips.
Silencers and stuff.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. It is modern.
It is a modern game. And it plays on modern computer parts.
And consoles. And it has crossplay, which is a mixed blessing as well. Maybe I won't opine on that too much.
So this is okay. Hold on.
All right.
Now we don't talk about crossplay too often.
Oh my gosh.
And I've every time that it comes up, it's like, oh, it's terrible.
So angry.
Now,
this is like a hot button.
Yeah. So on the PC, you have the mouse. You can basically aim wherever you want.
Mouse and keyboard.
When you're on the console, you have the auto aim.
You have a controller, right?
And controller and auto aim, because obviously you can't aim with a controller very well. In that context.
Yes.
When you're playing crossplay with somebody else.
Right.
Who has the advantage?
Oh, wow. As a PC player, I would tell you it's the console guys. Mm. And as a console player, they would tell you the PC guys, but for different reasons. So okay. I will try to represent both fair and unbalanced Fox News here. So as a PC player, I will tell you the advantages of a PC, you have a superior setup nearly 100% of the time. Because consoles are locked in that period of time when they were first released.
Oh, of course.
Yes. And PCs evolve. So if you have spent decent money, and if you're a listener to this, you probably have, on your PC, it's going to be better than a console nearly 100% of the time. And even if it isn't, you still have the advantages of more memory, higher resolution video, and the sensitivity of a mouse gives you huge advantages.
Yeah, and audio.
And, oh, yeah, amazing 3D audio, especially if you have a Creative Labs product. Or anything that has a like a scout mode, for example, that will amplify footsteps and that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah,
it's like cheating.
I enable that on accident sometimes, and say, "Oh my god, what's going on?"
Yeah, it's. I try not to play it because it. Yeah, I mean
It is a cheat code.
It is what it is. So, advantage PC is largely that you have that fine motor skills, you have the premium components to support it. Mm-hmm. Now. If you are a console player, you have a console.
You have a console.
In theory, everything just works because everybody's console from that generation is the same. So it's really easy to program it and play test it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a lot of weird bugs that come up on the PC versions. And every AAA game that's been released in the last 10 years seems to be released half-baked. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Oh, yeah.
But largely, the console is going to be the most stable. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you don't have all of those advantages, although you might have a console that puts out a 4K resolution, and you might have spent some money trying to get better sound out of all those things with the high thing. Most console players don't.
Right, right.
So it's designed to play on any screen, and those fine motor skills that we talked about are replaced on the console with a lot of, shall we say, assistance.
Yes, the auto aim.
So as an example, in an attempt to make Battlefield 2042, the previous game, competitive for the console players because there are a lot of them and cross-play, so they play in the same lobbies as the PC players. And, you know, for a while you could find lobbies that were all PC and all console, but it's very difficult to do so because of reasons and the age of the game. So, yeah, they were up to, I think, 8 times auto aim.
8 times?
8 times, I think, is where they ended up in.
So you could be aiming off at this building and then hit the robot dog coming at you?
Yeah. And I mean, as a PC player, it may seem biased and exaggerating.
Oh, yeah.
But as an example, if you're close to hitting somebody, it's going to very gently push your crosshair onto that person.
Oh.
And if you're not moving, that crosshair is going to stop and sort of maybe migrate towards your headshot. Right?
Yeah, that's bad.
1 times that is not very sensitive, but exponentially as we move up to 8 times, you don't really have to be very close to make a shot. Now, as a console player, you're probably saying, but yeah, because I don't have those fine motor skills, if you've ever tried to use a console in a first-person shooter, you would know it's very difficult to hit a moving target. Yes. Yeah. I get it.
I tried to play Quake 3 on the Dreamcast, It was impossible.
So, yeah, dear God. But at some point, you reach the point of diminishing returns as a PC player where I know every time I stop moving, a PC player is going to headshot me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And also, stuff that looks like cheating to a PC player happens all the time. Like, you come around the corner and the console player starts blapping, and they manage to get a headshot on you before you can finish them off because they just kind of have to be in the general neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so, it looks like cheats. But there's also hardware that accelerates and helps with cheating that's available. And the most popular version of it is a little product called the Kronos Zen.
That's like the man in the middle sort of thing?
Yeah. So they've had these things for years and years. You probably remember, you know, being able to buy those little cartridges and you'd plug your other cartridge into it and stick it into your Nintendo and it would help you out. And I know there are a couple different brands of that. So what this does is it intercepts those signals. You plug it into your PC. And so stuff that's incoming to your console goes through it, and stuff that's going outbound from your console goes through it. I may not be 100% exact on this, but it not only gives you that 8X, but it dials it up to 11. And so millions of these things have been sold, and just like hackers and PCs, right? Mm-hmm. It's an arms race where they put out an update, the Battlefield people try to counter it, and for a while the cheating goes down and then it comes back up and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So there is that. So in general, you can't keep cheating out as long as you enable crossplay.
Right.
But let's talk about the game, because that part's not fun.
Yeah, we digressed down that part a little too much.
So Battlefield came out. There is a really interesting free-to-play version of it that you can go out and play right now. It's their King of the Hill game. Mm-hmm. And it's free to play. And I mentioned that very clearly.
Yep.
So you can get the Battlefield experience in what I would say is not the optimal game mode, but you can check it out. See how it runs on your PC. See how you feel about the pace of it, because that's what makes every first person shooter unique.
Right. Now, game engine. Do you remember if it's the Unreal Engine or is it their own home?
They've got their own. It's the latest version of what they call Frostbite.
Okay, cool.
And what Battlefield does better than anybody else is what they like to call levolution, which is a fun term. Mm-hmm. And that is the ability to destroy things on the battlefield. Complete buildings can be crushed in some of the games.
And so realistically by...
Oh my gosh. Even in this one, it's amazing. You can be crushed by falling debris. So what Battlefield 6 has done is it's tried to find a balance between full levolution, which is being able to destroy everything so it's just a flat thing, and partial. And the result is amazing. You get these half-destroyed buildings that look like you're looking at a war zone on a Fox News broadcast.
Yeah.
So it gives you some interesting nooks and crannies that you can get into if you can find ways to jump into them. So the level's always changing. It becomes, I think, a little bit more difficult as the games progress. You have less places to hide that are big, more places to hide that are small. There are multiple game types out there. I play mostly Conquest, which is the classic Battlefield experience. You have flags that you capture.
Oh, yes, the multiple.
You have tickets that tick down if you have more flags, and every life is a ticket, and whoever gets to zero loses.
Right.
But they have Domination, which is like a tug of war. You have multiple flags. They have team death matches. They have all of these different game modes. So in a sense, this Battlefield is all things to everyone. Now, whether it's successful at those things largely depends on which game mode you like best.
Right.
But in the game, like all Battlefields, you have your main classes. You could be an engineer, a scout, a sniper, an assault, right? And they have their primary weapons pool. What Battlefield 6 has chosen to do is make nearly all weapons and equipment available to everyone.
Oh,
so
different.
As a sniper, you can run a sniper rifle or a submachine gun or a LMG or shotgun or whatever.
So you could be a like a scout sniper.
Yeah. And then each class has some specific equipment that's available to it that makes it unique. Mm-hmm. And the biggest change this time around, if you've played Battlefield before but not 6, is that the scout no longer carries a respawn beacon.
Oh.
So that is now Assault. And so that's just one example of the way things have been innovated. And that's partially to prevent sniper camping, because what we used to see as snipers would go and they would hide behind a rock on a hill with a respawn beacon, and they would just snipe the whole game. And if you shoot them, that's okay. They just immediately respawn and they're back. Mm-hmm. So the theory was that if they give it to the assault, which is supposed to be the front line thing, that you're moving forward and setting beacons and moving forward and setting beacons and keeping the action tight.
Yes.
So let's talk about what's good. What's good is the game is gorgeous. Mm. Oh my gosh, it's so gorgeous. And the levolution is amazing. And the weapons themselves are really great, although there's so many, I'm still not really sure about the differentiation.
Yeah. Now, as I remember, some of the past versions of the Battlefield seemed washed out in terms of its environment vibrancy.
Oh.
And some of that was really to make it seem like a war zone.
There is some of that too. And I think where Battlefield in general seems to go is everything goes into your tans and grays and your desert tones.
Yeah.
And that's not untrue. And I think it's because they're easier to render, but it does make things a little more monotone. But the advantage is that you can put everybody in sort of similar camo when there's no advantage or disadvantage.
Right. Off the wall question here, right?
Bring it.
Past Battlefields were always kind of set in a desert or mountainous environment.
Ooh, great question. So there is, of course, a lot of that, but there are a lot more urban maps to this because they can draw a lot tighter. The maps in general are a bit smaller, although that's supposed to be changing to encourage that tighter combat. Oh. So you might be in like one of the more popular maps, I'd say is maybe 8 or 9 city blocks of what I would say is a Middle Eastern style city.
Oh, cool. No jungles?
Not yet.
Ah.
But there is DLC coming. And there are maps that have no aircraft, and there are game modes that don't have vehicles for folks that prefer that really tight combat.
Oh, gotcha. Cool.
So we talked about what it does well, and that is the beauty of it. The combat experience is fluid. They
kind of fixed all of the things that people hated.
The
right?
movement is really fluid. And in fact, that's been a complaint in the past. Really fluid. So downsides of it is it's a lot faster paced. I hate to say it, but it's more like the pacing of Call of Duty. So if you're a first person shooter person, the TTK time to kill and TTD time to death rate is high.
Oh, so it's a lot like playing an early Quake game in terms of speed.
Yeah. So you're going to die a lot, which is a little frustrating because if you want a tactical shooter experience that Battlefield used to bring, it is less present.
Yeah. Where it was like a challenge to have survivability, where now it's you're basically being put into the line of fire.
Yeah. And it's expected you're going to die. And I'm just going to be honest. The meta supports that if your team isn't pushing, sometimes called zerging, you're likely going to lose because if the other team is trying to be tactical, lots of sniping and that sort of stuff, the other team's just going to roll over you because they're not afraid to rush and die.
It's like a football game.
Kinda.
Yeah.
So would I recommend it? Yes, I would because I'm a fan. But would I recommend it at full price? Yes, if you are also a fan of that style of game.
Hashtag no bias.
So the reality is try the free to play. See if you like what you see.
Well, the free to play will also let you know if your system is capable of playing it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And there are multiple modes out there. You can buy in fairly cheap and then buy battle passes that give you lots of cosmetics and weapon unlocks and stuff.
Gotcha.
It's going to continue in that model. So you can pay up front if you buy the Phantom Edition, which is the really expensive edition. It includes the first season, which kind of pays for the difference.
Cool. No, that actually sounds like a really solid review and recommend. We did talk about Battlefield 6 in a previous podcast.
I do find it very frustrating, but in a good way. Some of the balance issues, I think, are going to wash out as you continue to unlock equipment and attachments for your weapons.
Yeah. Well, and the last time that I got really frustrated with the game was when they issued an update to 7 Days to Die.
Oh, yeah.
And they changed a lot of stuff, and it didn't seem like it was balanced very well. And it made that version of the release unplayable, in my opinion. And it was really just because it was not survivable. It was a survival game, and you would not be able to survive. You were too spongy. And arguably that's really what they should be after, but it lost the charm of what made it fun to play.
Right.
And if you go too far in one direction or the other, then you lose a lot of the people that, you know, bought into it early.
Well, one of the most interesting things about the last two Battlefields, 2042 and this, is the concept of the portal server. And I'll leave you with this. What the portal server does is it allows you to create your own games, your own maps, and you can define everything. So you can play a hardcore mode where you don't have your health meters and stuff, one-shot kills, that kind of stuff. You can program bots. You can do all kinds of stuff. So you do have the ability to go and find these custom servers that are tailored for different game styles as well, and that's all included.
Oh, cool. Speaking of portals,
oh,
I think the next game that you're going to play has at least a version of the portal.
Well, the other really hot game that we've been playing is Borderlands 4.
Nice. Now, Borderlands 4 has gotten mixed reviews, partially from certain hardware requirements.
Oh my gosh. Well, the launch, like every AAA game seems to be lately, was a bit of a mess. And it wasn't helped by a very vocal mouthpiece.
Who happens to own the company?
Who said some pretty ridiculous stuff that I think hindered it.
Yeah.
So there were problems when it first came out. Now, normally I would play that also on the PC. And in fact, I have played every other Borderlands on the PC and on the console.
That's right. Borderlands 1 on the console?
All the way back to 1.
Wow. I didn't know that was on the console, to be honest. But I guess it makes sense.
So way back when, right? So a little bit about that. So what Borderlands excels at is that co-op experience like we talked about with Deep Rock Galactic. And it does on the console split screen.
Yeah, and that part confused me, mostly because I kept looking at the wrong screen. Sort of thing.
Well, it takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
So it is one of the few AAA titles that allows you to do couch co-op, which, if you're not familiar with the term, is the ability to sit with your buddies, your significant other, your family, and share that co-op experience next to each other as opposed to on two different computers that might be in two different rooms, two different houses, two different states.
Two different countries.
Right. I think couch co-op is largely unserved, but Borderlands has always done it. So you guys can really have that beer and pretzels experience where you're having a lot of fun playing the game, talking out of the game, and just being silly. Mm-hmm. And it's a different experience that I feel is really lacking from PC gaming since the LAN party scene has died.
Right. Well, and for Borderlands, once you've completed the core game, a lot of it is grinding for gear. If you're trying to find something specific, or even during the play, it's like, oh, this one's supposed to drop the B or something like that, some shield that you need to have. And it helps if you're playing with somebody else to go and, you know, go after this. It makes it faster.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the random drop element of it is always entertaining, right? Because you're both trying to find this cool gear and you might get something interesting that works for the other person or vice versa. So I guess we should step back and talk a little bit about the high level. So Borderlands at its core is an open world-ish game.
Yeah.
Where you can travel and do missions, or you can just continue to fight whatever randomly spawns on the map.
Yeah. I have always called it a looter shooter.
That's a great description.
And it's one of those situations where it is somewhat D&D-esque in that you have a core mission and then you have side missions.
That's great as well. And in fact, you have a leveling experience for your characters too.
Yeah.
So Borderlands has four core characters. They're called Vault Hunters. Mm-hmm. And this is based on the concept that was introduced early on in the storyline that you are an adventurer and you're trying to find these mythic vaults so that you can get treasure. So basically
stuff.
Mythic loot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so...
And the vaults were always filled with stuff that you didn't want.
That's the RNG, right? Yep. Which is a random number generator. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, you are trying to power up your character so you can tackle bigger and stronger bosses, bigger and stronger vaults that drop bigger and stronger loot, rinse and repeat.
Yep.
Hence the looter shooter. Now, where Borderlands excels, it has a gun generation system that I think they're claiming now has billions of combinations.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's just math, right? So you have, at least with Borderlands 2, which is the one that I am most familiar with. Mm-hmm. We played it a lot. There's entire months and months dedicated to it on the Hardware Asylum podcast. But the guns during that time were comprised of four components.
Oh, yeah. There's way more now.
Yeah. And each one of those things would be randomized when it would give you like an assault rifle.
Yeah.
And some of the components together made it garbage, and some of the components together made it a glass cannon.
Yeah.
And that is what you are after. And if you can recognize the components, then you can farm for the one you want.
Well, in different builds, different components work in their favor.
Yeah.
So there are four core characters.
In Borderlands 4, correct.
In Borderlands 4.
Yeah.
And they are Ammon, the Forge Knight, who's largely a melee fighter. And I say largely because all these characters are a little more versatile.
Uh-huh.
Harlow, the Gravatar, who controls energy spears. Which is kind of fun. Rafa, the ex-soldier, which is kind of the all-around assault-style character.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't played him yet, so I can't speak too much. And then Vex the Siren, which is who I've spent the most time playing. So between Harlow and Vex.
Vex new?
Yeah, Vex is the newest siren.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
There's supposed to only be like two or three sirens in the entire universe, according to Jack.
Oh, but they keep finding them.
Yeah.
So for those of you that are not familiar, a siren is able to harness energy like fire, air, earth, water type energy to perform sort of magical attacks.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting side effect. One of the reasons I chose Vex in this one is there are three major paths that you can experience.
Mm-hmm.
One where she summons a giant kitty that I think you would like called Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And one where she does sort of energy attacks of her own. Haven't experienced that too much.
Yeah.
And then the one that I've been playing the most where she summons Grim Reaper specters to assist her.
Huh, interesting.
So in a sense, the build I've been working on, she sits back and fights from a distance, hopefully, knock on wood, mm-hmm. while the specters distract and attack for her.
Oh, that's actually very interesting.
It is kind of fun. So they're corporal, and of course you can get different powers for them.
Yeah, it was better than the Borderlands 3 siren. I was really disappointed with her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the wife has been playing Harlow the Gravatar, and initially she used her energy spheres to capture people and lift them up in the air, and then different effects would happen.
Oh, kind of like what Maya did in Borderlands 2.
That's a really great example.
Yep.
And then we recently converted over to one to where she just creates sort of a giant ball of energy and shoots it Dragon Ball Z style, and and stuff happens.
Hayukan.
Yeah, Dami Namika, I think is right. My son would correct me if he were here.
Well, in Street Fighter 2 was Ken and Ryu would do the Hayukan.
Hayukan.
I think, or maybe that was the punch.
I think so.
Yeah. Someone will correct us down in the show notes.
Exactly. So let's talk about the gameplay.
Okay.
So when you start playing, you're dropped off in this basically prison escape thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a spoiler because it's basically the tutorial beginning of the game.
Oh, yeah. Like the first mission.
Before you make it to open world,
mm-hmm.
You have main missions and side missions. The main missions can be completed relatively quickly if you're focused, which is, I think, new.
Uh-huh.
So currently there are 50 levels available, and then there are additional like side levels, like all the Borderlands have had, where you can continue to earn points for perks, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. So was it a lot like Borderlands 2 where you could complete the main mission and only be halfway to level 50?
Yes. In fact, what I'm hearing is it's pretty easy to beat it before you're level 30.
Well, that jives.
And so, that's pretty on par. Now, of course, there's going to be a lot more content that comes out. But right now, it's pretty easy to complete it. There are multiple difficulty levels. We play on the medium difficulty, which is experienced, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Which is what I'd recommend to anybody that plays games regularly, unless you're serious, and then you can play the more hardcore version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the harder you play, the better your loot, but also the harder the game gets.
Yeah, of course.
What we've found is that you're playing in basically chapters. Each chapter has a boss at the end. Some of them will have a mini boss and then a boss. So it follows that familiar structure that so many games do.
Yeah.
And each boss is going to be really unique in their attack patterns and their style. And so part of the fun is trying to figure out how to crack their attack style with whatever style of build you've chosen.
Oh, I gotcha. That is always the challenge, the build, you know, because you go down, how many trees is there? Three or five?
Three major trees, and then each one of those has three minor trees inside of it, and you can mix and match.
Oh, crazy. Okay. Yeah, because the, and you can respec?
Yes. One of the things that Borderlands is interesting about is early on, money seems important.
Yeah.
And then as the game progresses, you realize that it really isn't. And what money does is it's how you pay for respawns and respecs and things like that.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, it's always a percentage of how much money you have. So you always have enough money once you get through about the first hour of play.
Yeah. Well, and that, yeah, it's like, well, even in Borderlands 2, it's like it was a respawn money and it was a percentage.
Yep.
Because it's like you could have no money and, okay, do you just not respawn? Well, no, you still respawn. You just, now it does like one coin or whatever it costs, right?
Yeah.
In terms of story, though.
Story, yes.
So
let's talk about the story.
Yeah.
Let's talk pros and cons. Story is one of them.
Is it a pro or a con?
I think it's a pro.
Okay.
The storyline is interesting, very spoilerific, but I found the characters interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to do anything original anymore. The finish of it was clever, if a little bit predictable, but the bosses are interesting and they're all integrated into the storyline, all the core bosses.
Okay. Now, going to be a little biased here, probably.
Bring it.
Okay. I found that the Borderlands series follows the Microsoft cadence in terms of good versus bad.
Okay.
So, like, for instance, Windows 7. Great. Next Windows 8, kind of garbage.
All right.
Next one, Windows 8, good. That sort of thing, right? Now, Borderlands 1, arguably, it was really about the gameplay, not so much about the story.
Yeah.
There was a lot of side stories that were great, but overall, it was kind of meh.
But you could say that you need to at least know about the characters because they get revisited.
Exactly.
In 2.
And the idea is that game introduced the characters and then you learn something about them moving forward.
And that pattern continues through 4.
Now, in Borderlands 2, I would say arguably the best story in a game that I've ever played in my entire life.
I would argue that Borderlands 2 might be the best Borderlands game.
Okay.
That's a difficult hill to die on because 3 was pretty good also.
3 for me was kind of a slow burn and I lost interest before it got good.
Oh, I thought the characters in 3 were all over the map, but the good ones were better.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Okay.
Now.
And bigger, of course. Everything's bigger every generation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. For context, I stopped playing Borderlands 3 at the time that they killed Lilith.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And that was early on. Oh, and at that point,
that's like a super spoiler, but it's old. Okay.
It's old. It's been out for a while. But that was when I stopped playing because it's like, I'm not vested enough in this story arc to actually continue.
Oh, good. Because then you don't know what happens to Lilith later.
Well, I know she comes back.
Ah, because nobody ever dies.
Nobody ever. None of the good characters ever die.
Right.
Well, and I did like the fact that, and this was kind of stupid in my opinion, it's like you would go to a different planet in Borderlands 3 and you would revisit some of the old characters that weren't part of that game.
Right.
So you'd run into Maya on one planet and stuff like that. So that portion of it I kind of liked, but it seemed forced. It was like, we want to create a story, but we don't know how anymore.
All right.
Now, Borderlands 4, how does that rate on the scale?
So if we want to do the every other.
Well, you don't have to do every other.
So 1 was good and necessary. 2 was great.
Mm-hmm.
3 was good, but maybe a bit of take everything people like about 2 and dial it up to 11.
Or attempt to, yeah.
Which is maybe a bit much. There are some other games we won't mention in the Telltale land. Then you've got Tiny Tina, which grew on me.
Yeah, that one, I've never played that one, but I did like the DLC, which is that it was based off of.
It grew on me. I didn't love it initially, but yeah. So, yeah, all right. And then 4 is, aside from some growing pains, from the release, I think is going to be good. Now there are some pros and cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So let's try to summarize some pros and cons and wind it up with that. So pros, it's got the same crazy humor that Borderlands is famous for.
Awesome.
It's irreverent and silly, and that extends to weapons and storylines and side missions.
It's supposed to be.
Some will make you laugh. There are ridiculous weapons that do stupid things.
Like run around and shoot.
Yeah. There are weapons that will talk to you, and some of them don't like you. that sort of stuff.
Yep.
The effects are awesome and all over the place, a little bombastic to the point where sometimes it's hard to know what's going on.
Oh,
and some of that
sensory overload sort of stuff.
Some of that might be because we play split screen.
Yeah.
But, it's crazy. You can watch Conan O'Brien play this, check the internet also and get an idea. Cause it's easy to get lost, especially if you're not a very serious gamer. Mm-hmm. But the storyline doesn't wear itself out. And there's lots of content for you to chase. I will give you my hot beginner's tip, and that is you will be happier if you don't do any side missions.
Oh, so it's like main story is better than side story.
Well, no, it's just that you want to get the main story finished before things get too strong.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so...
It does have some really, I think, kind of easy farming, which helps you get stuff if you're into that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe a pro or a con.
Yeah. Well, in the previous games, you had to do the side missions because you were too spongy to do the main mission.
Yeah. And you might need better gear.
Yeah.
And what I've found is if we fight a boss and it's just devastating, then we'll go and we'll find better gear and mess with our builds and come back a day or two later and try again.
Yeah.
And most of the time we'll stomp them.
Oh, cool.
Now, the downsides, negatives.
Oh.
It really, really, really feels like they don't understand how the inventory system works.
and how so? Is it like you don't have enough space?
Well, there's never enough space, but it's awkward. Up until very recently, didn't remember what favorites and settings and filters you put. So every time you went in, you had to start over. And the default was manufacturer. I don't know who cares enough to start with manufacturer when you're probably interested in things like, you know, level and strength and rarity and cost and damage and stuff.
Yeah. I want the gold color at the top, then purple. Do they still use the same colors?
Yes.
Cool. Awesome.
And I haven't found them yet, but I, you know, it's what is it? White, green, blue, gold are the standards.
Gold was always legendary.
Yeah. Gold is still legendary.
Okay.
And then after that, there are some others and different ones have done different things. I think they're pearl essence is what they are again.
Yeah. Pearl was better than legendary, but it was kind of, I'm using Borderlands 2 as a reference because I haven't played the others, but it was kind of legendary or pearl was the same rarity. They just did different stuff.
Well, and the pearl essence is maybe a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. So some of the drops are only available from specific bosses. So it's kind of like raid bosses in a way for those of you that are familiar.
That was normal.
So when you first defeat a boss, you're probably not going to get a legendary drop. Mm-hmm. The good, as we talk about the good, is that you can immediately pay some money to play again. You don't even have to resave the game or anything. It's built into the system, the farming now.
Oh, that.
Which is really great if you're farming, because you just go right out and go again, right out and go again.
Yeah.
And there are usually boxes handy, so you can sell your loot, buy ammo, that sort of stuff, and go again.
Yeah, the little vending machine things.
So it really supports that mode.
That's not bad.
Everything in the game respawns at a pretty high rate of speed, including, you know, the mobs that you encounter as you're traveling from place to place.
So, oh, is that area specific? So it's not when you're trying to clear area that keeps respawning?
They will, but the respawn is at a rate where I think if you aren't dawdling, you're probably okay.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Fast travel is a negative. There aren't a lot of fast travel locations. You have to find them and clear them as you progress, and there are not enough of them.
Oh, right.
So you're going to find yourself fast traveling and then moving. You will unlock a vehicle. One of the other reasons that you need to do the mission, the core missions earlier, is so you can get a vehicle, because otherwise it sucks.
You're walking everywhere.
Movement's pretty fluid. Gunplay is really fun and bombastic. Other negatives, you have to unlock the map, and unless you've encountered stuff, it doesn't always show up on the map.
That's kind of normal.
There's a wayfinder system, but it only shows for a short period of time, and then you have to wait for it to reset, although they seem to be tweaking that, so it's better. Mm-hmm. The map doesn't always make sense. There are areas that your wayfinder just takes you to a blank wall.
Oh. Oh, yeah, because it's probably somewhere on the other side of that.
Yeah, so you might spend a half an hour trying to do it. There are areas that you should be able to go. You should be able to climb because there are ledges and stuff. The game does not let you. Yeah. Artificial boundaries. That's why I say it's mostly open world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even like Borderlands and Borderlands 2, you know, you had areas and then you would fast travel to go to the next area. Yeah. But on the map, it was just right next door. But that was how you loaded that up. It was still somewhat open world, but not progressively open.
Yeah. If you're playing co-op like I am, a lot of the menus and things aren't designed for co-op. So it's very difficult to do things on your screen to the point where we regularly will have one of us log out so the other person can manipulate their inventory where they can see things and then play some more. I hope they fix that. It's bad. And it feels like it's designed for PC, which is a nice bonus. And we're playing it on the consoles, so the controls are not very sensitive or intuitive.
Yeah. Well, based off of your description, it really kind of sounds like they felt like they needed to tweak it because they felt like they needed to tweak it.
Yeah.
And instead of making it better, they've almost made it worse, but in a different way.
Yeah. And all these are things that they claim that they are working on.
Yeah.
I always feel like couch co-op is kind of like an afterthought, which is a shame because Borderlands, that's one of its strengths.
Yeah. Well, maybe I will have to pick that up and play it over the holiday season. And sometime next year we can, recoup and see what I think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course you can play with your friends no matter what they're playing on. So get out there and give it a go.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.